One of the great things that we are urged to do this weekend is to pray for our King. Of course, we've been encouraged to do quite a number of things, haven't we? We've been encouraged to get together as a community. We're encouraged to share a meal together, as we are about to do. We're encouraged to decorate our homes and other buildings, and I think many of you have done some of that. But we are more than encouraged, we are urged to pray for our new King. Charles III was crowned yesterday in a ceremony that was packed full of, well, splendour and regalia and tradition and pageantry. But it was also very full, full to the brim, with significant words. Many of them ancient words, many of them very well chosen words. And it will be a mistake for us to focus only on the costumes and the bunting and not pay attention to the words that were spoken. And I'm thinking above all of words that were shouted by those who were in Westminster Abbey yesterday, and words which also we have just now sung. God save the King. And as you noticed in that psalm that John just read for us, in Psalm 20, we see exactly those words. O Lord, save the King. That was written by a man who was himself the king. That was written by King David, king over the land of Israel about 3,000 years ago. Now, King David, as well as being a renowned soldier, he was also a songwriter and musician. The kind of combination that you could only get nowadays if you pictured someone like King Richard the Lionheart, whom I already referred to earlier on, and Ed Sheeran. If you can imagine those two put together in some way, I can't, I'll be honest. But if you can, that would be a little bit like King David, I think. And the songs he wrote tell us a great deal. One of the primary things that comes through in lots of songs, including this one, this psalm, Psalm 20, is that he lived in a time of warfare, didn't he? He lived in a time of great conflict and trouble and turbulence. Internationally, there was war with neighbouring nations, and there were also threats of treachery and treason from within the land. So there were internal and external threats. And this song was written to teach the people something crucial, something absolutely crucial for their life as a nation and for their survival. And it was also something very, very simple. We must trust in God. Isn't it true that we also live in tricky times, difficult times, times that are already testing us, testing our character and our resilience as a nation? I think we as a country and many other countries around the world are facing some hard questions just now. I don't really need to sum it up, and I don't want to dwell on the challenges, but they are there. There is open war not all that far away. Our new king is, it's probably hard to see, but that's a picture of the throne that was in use yesterday. He is taking the throne at a time when there is open war, not very far from our own borders, and with threats, perpetual threats, that it could spread, that it could escalate. The world in general, I would suggest, seems more fragile, possibly, than at any time in the last 80 years. And on our own streets, what is the news we read every day almost from our own streets? We read of anger and conflict. We read of strikes and protests. And many people now think, and the way they behave, it goes along with this, they now think that if someone disagrees with you, you just have to ignore them. And if enough people ignore them, they are then, what's the word? Cancelled. That's what's happening now. There is no desire, no attempt to reach compromise, to reach solutions, to reach reconciliation. And in the face of all of these trends, who or what do we trust in? Who or what do we trust in to sleep peacefully at night? Where will we place our trust in order to have peace of mind? King David points out in this psalm, most people trust in conventional things. Now, what he says, conventional things in his day, he says chariots and horses. That was the phrase he used. Some trust in chariots and some in horses. I wonder what that might be translated, amplified a little bit, widened out, and translated into the thinking of people in our own day today. Some might say, well, I've got money saved up. In case things all go pear-shaped, I've got money saved up. Or we've got insurance policies to cover almost everything so that we're insured. We're okay. We can be at peace. Some will say the crucial thing is to be able to vote for our leaders and vote for sensible leaders, if at all we can find some, because the answer lies in democracy. The answer is in having a good democratic system, and that should be the best way of trying to keep things safe and stable and well organized. Others will say, and they do say, I'm trusting in technology. Technology will give us the answers. And in all kinds of ways, we are hearing that and seeing that the solutions lie in another step of progress in technology. And of course, it's always tempting to think along these lines as well. This last suggestion, and this is similar to what King David said in his day, the way people thought. If things in the world turn really nasty, well, we can at least trust that we have got pretty capable armed forces. So that will give some people the freedom to sleep at night. We know that King David was an outstanding, absolutely outstanding soldier and leader. There's no doubt about that. I think he would rank alongside, you could make a list of Napoleon and Nelson and Wellington and Alexander the Great. I think, from the evidence we have, King David would rank with any of them and even better. But does he say he trusted in his own military prowess? That's not what he said. He did not trust in military strength or in his own reputation, his actually fearsome reputation by the time he had been there a few years. He did not trust in those things. What he said was this: some trust in chariots and some in horses, but we trust in the name of the Lord our God. Now that is a challenge for us. Will our nation have the guts to pause and turn to God and try, even tentatively try, trusting him? 80 years ago, it did. 80 years ago, the nation did. Tentatively, of course. Not everybody wholeheartedly, of course. But if ever our nation was a nation at prayer, I think that's when it was. Because King George VI, the grandfather of King Charles, led the nation in prayer at several moments of crisis during World War II. Arguably, there are two ways in which it could happen again. The first would be like before. If there were a crisis that produced this, and if there were a monarch who were to lead it, then it could happen again. But you may well be thinking, and I imagine you would say to me, but Steve, that doesn't look so likely now as it did in 1940. And I probably have to admit, it doesn't. Well, the other way is simply this. One person at a time. One person at a time. In other words, you and me. Will you genuinely put your trust in God? Will you say to the God whose power created the cosmos, yes, I trust that you're able to take care of me? Will you trust the God whose written word, whose message to us is packed full of promises? Promises of love and care. Promises to sustain and to bless. And remembering that there are countless people down through the ages whose testimony is that he has never yet failed on one of those promises. Above all, will you trust in the God who loves the world so much that he sent his Son to bring reconciliation. You see, when we get specific, I think someone might ask, it's all very well to say trust in God, but what does that mean in reality? What does it actually mean? How do you do that? And the best answer is given to us in his word. And his word explains how humanity was cut off from God by its own sin. Because God is fiercely holy. And we are just, in fact, we are an unholy mess. Human beings, if we are honest, we are. And there's no running away from it. But his wise plan was to turn everything completely around by sending his son to pay the price of all of our sin. And that was his death on the cross at Calvary. And so that with that price paid, if we will acknowledge him, we can be reconciled with God once again. And being reconciled with God means peace with God. And that's no small prize. Peace with God means true life. And the last two words of that verse, eternal life. But lastly, I want to focus your thoughts on just one phrase that I used just now. If we will acknowledge him. If we will acknowledge him. You might recall that in the coronation service yesterday, there was a part fairly early on in the service called the recognition. Do you remember that? Did you perhaps read about it? Did you see the outline? It was there in the service, very, very specifically. The recognition. That was when the new king was formally presented in turn to each of the four different sections, the four different parts of the abbey and the people who were sat there. He was presented to them. And each time he was presented so that they could respond. And this is something that's been done since medieval times. And the words are as important now as they ever were. Here is the explanation, the official explanation of that. The recognition is a moment for the congregation as representatives of the realms to affirm and acknowledge that the king is the one they recognize as head of state. That recognition is a small picture of the true recognition that we must give, that we are called to give. It's like an image, a little parable, and a very humble one. What went on in Westminster Abbey yesterday is a humble picture of the real recognition that we are called on to give to the one who is the true king, Jesus Christ, the King of Kings, the sovereign over the entire cosmos for all time. And also there is one other difference, which is that in this case we can't depend on somebody else to represent us, to be there in the abbey and say it on our behalf. Each one of us must do it for ourselves. So my last question and my only question really for you this morning is, have you done so? If not, I would urge you, don't put it off. Give him that recognition, King of Kings and Lord of Lords.